My name is Angie Estrellas. I'm 48 years old, and today is October 25th, 2016. We are at the Transgender Resource Center in Albuquerque, New Mexico, and I am Jerry's friend.
My name is Jerry Cheney. I am 60 years old. Today's date is October 25th, 2016. Location is the Transgender Resource Center of New Mexico in Albuquerque, and Angie is my friend.
So, Jerry, tell me about where you were born and what it was like growing up for you.
Well, I was born in Rutland, Vermont, but the story of my growing up is a bit interesting because my dad was a pastor in the Seventh-day Adventist Church, and we moved a lot. So I was born in Rutland, moved to Bangor, Maine, moved to New Brunswick, Canada, two different cities in New Brunswick, Canada, then to Pennsylvania, two different cities. And then the bulk of my formative years, if you will, from like fifth or sixth grade all the way through high school, were spent in Maine, in Norridgewock, Maine. And then when I went to college, that was in Massachusetts, in central Massachusetts, where I stayed around until moving in here, basically.
And when you were growing up, how did you identify?
Well, confused, I guess. The reality is that we didn't get much information growing up back in those days. Now, when I was a young kid, I was in the 60s, and when I was in my teens, it was, and early 20s, it was the 70s. So there just wasn't a lot of information. There was about more information about sexuality coming along, and gender seemed to be folded into that more in people's minds. So if you acted, if you were gay, it was expected that you might act somewhat effeminate as a sort of, I don't know, stereotype, if you will, that was out in society. So I knew who I was attracted to by early adolescence, but I didn't act on that until I was a freshman in college. Hmm. While I was a freshman in college, I met this group of gay young men, and it was a Seventh-day Adventist-affiliated college, so this was pretty remarkable. With the fall of 1975.
Oh, wow, yeah.
One of those persons, though, was very flamboyant, very open about who he was, and I had talks with him a number of times in the dorm stairwell and obvious places. He dragged me down to a gay bar once. I went along convinced I was doing a sociological experiment. So it was an interesting time, but it all came to a screeching halt when my friend, when he was home on break, committed suicide. Because his family just couldn't deal with who he was, and his church wasn't much help either. And so those two things just came together to really make him feel like there was no sense carrying on. And I had been sort of looking up to him as someone who was comfortable with who they were. And so as a result, I sort of went back into the closet after that happened about my sexuality or who I was attracted to for a little over a decade. Mm. So it was a long time.
That's sad. That must have been really hard.
Yeah, it was a very difficult time, and it was like you had to sort of suffer in silence or alone, because mm-hmm. if you told anybody why it was upsetting you, then you would be outing yourself a bit. So it was a difficult time.
Did your family know at all, or were you completely in the closet?
I was completely closeted. I don't know if my family knew. Ironically, my father, although I believe he was heterosexual, and he did act a bit effeminately sometimes. And it's only looking back on this that I realize that when comparing with other fathers and so forth. Mm-hmm. And I think that that was something that always he was fighting against. And I think as a result of that, it made him sensitive to how I was acting, I think, a little bit. Mm. And we did come to some pretty serious arguments during adolescence.
Because he was trying to...
It took forms of specific issues. Like, for example, he was very narrow-minded as to what music was acceptable. And in one case, there was this sort of a Christian band, but they actually had a drummer and a bass, and he found that very offensive. And so he took the record and flung it across the room. I'll never forget that. So there were little moments like that. And I remember at camp meeting, which is this place Adventists gather in the summer in tents, and they put the big tents up to, preach and sing and all that. Mm. But I got into an argument there, and there was a table in our tent, and I just totally threw it up because I was so upset. And I don't remember what it was. I think it was about either the length of my hair or, I don't know, my facial. It was something. But so there were those moments where things flared up. But I was lucky because where I lived was in a rural area, and my parents really were good about just sort of letting me go out in nature. Mm-hmm. Particularly, once I got to the 8th, 9th, 10th grade, I used to go to a clearing in the woods behind our home where there was a beaver behind next door and just really get into nature. Henry David Thoreau was my hero back then. So it was sort of an interesting time. Identified things like a couple of famous quotes, the massive men lead lives of quiet desperation. And then, of course, the famous quote about walking, the different drummer quote that most people know. Mm-hmm. And that resonated with me as well. So those were little glimmers of when I was sort of putting things together. And we would talk about sexuality amongst my friends back then. Mm-hmm. But it was more about like things like masturbation, because that was a big taboo in the church too. So never mind who you were thinking about while you're masturbating, just the thought of doing it. And so I was like poring over what the prophet, because the Adventists have a prophetess, Ellen White. So I was looking at what does she say? And so it was like, but she was all influenced by John Harvey Kellogg in Michigan, who was the famous guy in the movie with Matthew Broderick.
Oh, right.
The Road to Wellville, I think it was.
I think that is it, yeah.
Yeah, so there's a little bit of a looniness to that. But anyway, so that's sort of was an interesting part of my childhood.
So then what happened when you came out to your parents? What was that like?
Well, it was followed an incident. I came out to a lot of friends in the area now this is back before I determined my gender. So this was about my sexuality. I came out to a number of people in early February of 1987. And I began to become very active right away, because I'm that kind of, once I identify something, it's my cause, I'm like gung-ho to go for it. And so I got instantly involved, went to Boston Pride, and I remember being in the Unitarian Church, and they were singing, a couple famous gay songs with the organ playing. I was like, wow, this is so cool. And then the march. And then I went to the March on Washington that same year in October.
Oh, wow. March on Washington.
Yeah, October 11th, 1987.
That's great.
Which coming out day is sort of immemorial love, in a way. So it was right after coming back from that event that my parents called. And because I'd went with the Unitarian group down there, which was a church I had finally found that accepted me, said that I went with a church group, and I didn't say where, and he said, that wouldn't happen to have been in Washington, D.C., would it? And I said, yes, I think that means we need to talk about something. And so that's where it started. That's where I came out. So it was, you know, a little forced, I guess, in a way, but it worked out. They dealt with it by not talking about it, though, frankly. That was the way it was dealt with.
Hmm. Is that typical in your family?
Oh, yeah.
Just deal with it without talking about ignoring it.
If there was a big issue, a contentious issue, they would just not talk about it.
Mm. And how many siblings do you have?
I have one sister.
And she just came here.
Yeah,
to visit.
She just came to visit last weekend. She's known I was gay for a long time. I went with my ex-partner there. I should say attracted to men because my current gender differs a little bit, but I'm attracted to men. So they knew that. And so after a while, it sort of evolved. I'm sort of lost a bit here.
Your gender identity evolving, do you mean? Or the gay identity evolving?
Well, I think it's a little bit of both, but as all of that sort of gelled together, I was finding it difficult to sort of determine exactly who I was in the midst of it, particularly around the gender stuff.
When did you first become aware? Because I know when I met you, you were, I think, still identified, at least in public and outwardly, as a gay man. Is that correct?
Yeah, and sort of in the bear community at the time, although I refused to be part of the hyper-masculine bear community, so I always called myself a fairy bear, still do sometimes.
Right.
Because I just hated that hyper-masculinity. Because back when people were assuming that's who I was, I would get treated like that way. And you would get maybe younger people assuming you wanted to be their daddy or something. I said, no. Yeah. And dress up in leather and chains and whatever. I just wasn't me. And so once I got the chance to be more of myself, I tried ways of identifying myself as a different kind of person.
Mm-hmm.
By growing my hair long, although I still had a beard, but I grew my hair long and sort of called myself, you know, fairy bear and that sort of thing to sort of differentiate who I was.
Did that work?
Well, it sort of worked. I'll tell you, there was one of the famous gay pioneers, Harry Hay.
Oh, right. He's from
founded
Mexico.
A group called the Radical Fairies.
Mm-hmm.
And that sort of attracted me as a sort of a gender mixed with sexuality option for a while. And I thought that the part of me that felt feminine could be folded into that identity a bit.
Mm-hmm.
And it was only later in life, well, you know, in fact, 2.5 years ago or so, that I began to realize that there was something different going on, and that was because of a couple events that I'd read about, heard about, and research online.
What were those events?
Well, the first memorable event took place in Oakland and Berkeley, between those two areas. There is a young person who was assigned male at birth but identified as a gender. They were wearing a skirt, and when they were riding in the bus, a boy that was also riding the bus set the skirt on fire. Or I think he was the person, Sasha was his name, at the time, I think was sleeping a bit. And so he got really badly burned on his legs, or severely burned.
Mm.
And so that made the news, and as the news started to describe who he identified as and how he identified and why he identified, it all sort of began to click in my mind, you know, this is what I sort of been looking for, is this place between masculine and feminine, or that sort of ignored gender altogether and just sort of took the parts that people stereotypically applied to those genders and just mixed them together how I felt I wanted to mix them together to be myself. So that's what sort of evolved. And it was Tumblr, frankly. You know, here I was at the time, like a 57, 58-year-old guy on Tumblr reading posts from people who were in their, well, late teens and 20s and maybe very early 30s talking about their concept of non-binary gender identity and what that meant to them, and all the different identities that people had sort of adopted. And that's where I began to put the puzzle pieces together to sort of put a name to it.
That makes sense. Now, I knew a lot about transgender, just F to M and M to right. F before I met you. But one thing I've appreciated about our friendship is I never understood or even heard the terms agender or non-binary.
Right.
You really introduced those to me. And I was telling you at lunch, I'm still not sure I could, if somebody asked me what they meant, like how I would define that for somebody else. You know, I still feel like I'm learning.
Right. I just take a moment to say that, to answer your question that was implied there. I do identify as agender, which specifically means genderless. Mm-hmm. And that's so separate from gender expression. You know, there's mm-hmm. gender identity, gender expression, and then there's, you know, sexual orientation and romantic orientation, and all of those things can be different.
Mm-hmm.
And your emotional orientation, who do you, so, but specifically for me, I was just thinking, you know, I really don't specifically feel like a man or a woman, but I feel just sort of like someone who wants to sort of just go into the world and take the parts that stereotypically apply to different people and just mix and match them together mm-hmm. how I want to.
Mm-hmm.
And I like to think of it as beyond gender. You know, that's the sort of term that I use often is that for me it's about being beyond gender, so that gender is an aspect that you play around with, you know, for expressing how you feel about yourself, and which may vary a little bit from day to day. And it's why, you know, the way I out present or dress or whatever changes, but it's becoming more feminine now than it was.
Yeah, I've noticed this like a transition over this last year, maybe that's when it started. I think it was 2 years ago when you shaved off your beard.
Yeah.
And I maybe for the last 2 years, it's just been this really nice evolution that I've witnessed.
Yeah, I think the
like
first
your
thing
appearance
I,
changing.
There were things I did. I had my ears pierced, and then mm-hmm. I tried dyeing or using this beard mascara stuff kind of to color my beard purple to see if that made it look like what I wanted. And I still wasn't satisfied. So I just decided to shave the whole thing off, and that felt really cool. And it's sort of like I was hiding behind the beard a bit, you know?
Oh, right.
So this is like, you know, sort of unleashing who I am.
Mm-hmm.
And the changes you've noticed over time, I think, have just been sort of doing that with other bits and pieces. You know, the hair on my arms, maybe sometimes I shave it off, or my legs or chest mm-hmm. or whatever. It's just depending on, you know, whether I just want to see how I feel looking like that. You know, is this me or not? And that's what I like about my gender orientation, is it gives me room to explore, you know, without being really tied down to society's sort of standards of what you should do in gender X or Y or
mm-hmm.
or Z.
You know, and with something you said to me a while ago, it didn't even occur to me, but because your clothes have also changed, like wearing more dresses and skirts and mm-hmm. feminine things, and And it's been really fun to see you so excited. And
yeah, I had hardly bought anything except just when I absolutely needed, you know, a pair of jeans or black pants or something. So, you know, I have literally now have done almost exclusively shopping for either shirts that can be, you know, sort of unigender shirts that have colorful like this one or mm-hmm. that have sayings. You know, I bought a lot of shirts that said agender or mm-hmm. genderqueer or whatever, non-binary and proud. Because I you know, sort of flaunted a bit because I don't have a car to put a bumper sticker on. So I'm the bumper sticker. So that's sort of how that evolved, I think, over time. And I'm just playing around. And I think the group, the support group that I go to has a big part of that.
Mm-hmm.
Because up until I first went to that, and I think the first time you drove me to it, I think it was at a co-op store.
Oh, right.
And mm-hmm. that was like in April-ish or something mm-hmm. of 2015. Slowly as I became involved in that group and sort of moved in a position of sort of being seen as one of the more of the coordinators or leaders or whatever, and learning how everyone else identified, how they felt about themselves, how they described who they were,
mm-hmm.
and, you know, was able to help a couple of people who were gender nonconforming but didn't know how to describe who they were and never heard of non-binary identities. And so that was sort of interesting discussing that, seeing their eyes light up a bit. And
mm-hmm.
But then learning from the trans women in the group how it felt. And it's been being sort of in women's shoes a bit because of the way I present myself. It's really opened my eyes to a lot of things that I hadn't really considered before.
Like what?
Well, you know, there's this expression about toxic masculinity. I don't know if you've heard that.
Did you say toxic?
Toxic masculinity. And it's sort of, I never knew quite what that meant until I began to see, like, people doing mansplaining, I think is the term that they use. Where
yes.
And I remember a distinct time when I did that. We were actually at a radio station. We were going to have this little radio show on a public access thing, and we were learning how to use the equipment or something, and I was getting ready to all do and guns were gun-ho how to do it, and I guess I stepped on this woman's toes a bit, and she just said, "You're such a man." And I did, where did that come from? But then I understood what that meant now, coming out, and it's been the little things that you hear, that's the way women are treated in society, that they're less respected for their intelligence than men are sometimes, and they're put in a position of inferiority, particularly in heterosexual relationships a lot of time. And all of those sorts of things, you just sort of, you know, how could I not have noticed that before? You know, it's been interesting, frankly.
It's opened your eyes a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's very pervasive being a woman. If we had to recount just in a normal day all the different slights or different things that happen at work, and we would be constantly talking about just, you know, so much of that gender and sexism that comes at us. One thing that, back to that comment that you made to me, you know, in our friendship, we'll go out and do errands together, and I'm so, like, you're Jerry, and I just accept who you are and how you present on a given day, and I don't really even think about it. It's other than, oh, that's a pretty top, and, you know, we're talking about our day. And there was one particular day when I was trying to be efficient. I don't know if you remember this, because I had some errands, you had errands. And so in my mind, it was like, well, what if I drop you here while I go do this, and then I'll come back and pick you up. And then you were brave enough to actually tell me that the reason that doesn't really work for you so much is because having me with you at Target, you feel kind of safer, you feel braver, and it really blew my mind in the sense of, like, God, I hadn't even put myself in your position at all. Like, I felt like I was being accepting and all that. But it made me realize as an ally, it's like, but I wasn't thinking about that. Really, what is it like for you to wear a skirt through Target or, you know, to,
right.
to wear makeup? And over those last 2 years, you've gotten just more and more open about that and how you present. And I was so grateful to you for telling me that day that how you felt. Do you remember that day?
Yeah.
Do you want to tell me your perception of that day?
Well, first of all, I have anxiety panic disorder. So anything that sort of has the potential for being trouble in some way can trigger me off. And I had, prior to coming out and discovering my gender identity, I had really become a hermit crab, you know, or whatever. I was in my house and hardly ever came out. And the sort of that agoraphobia sort of a thing would kick in when I was out, and it just sort of fearful of how people would react to me presenting. And because I, you know, only identified as, you know, my agender and had this more feminine presentation for a year and a year and a half, maybe, it's been a little difficult. I'm feeling more comfortable to just sort of step out and do it on my own. Like, I went out with my sister mm-hmm. and her husband, and they didn't even bat an eye. They were just fine with it. Mm-hmm. Of course, I had set them up beforehand. I said, do you mind how I present? And, you know, my sister said, well, I see the pictures you post, so I know how you look now. And mm-hmm. so I just took that to say, okay. So I think that's a milestone for them. I mean, they're pretty conservative. My brother-in-law was, I don't know what he identifies now, but he was quite a gung-ho Republican person and lived in Houston, Texas. So, but I think he's sort of ditched a little bit of it with Trump on the scene. But anyway.
So, yeah, I think that's really beautiful that your sister was so embracing of you this last weekend.
Yeah, the first thing that she wanted to do when I stepped out was take a picture with me.
Oh, that's great.
The very first thing when I stepped out of my house. Yeah.
That's fabulous.
And then when I came back, she wanted to go into my house because I have a bit of an eccentric decor in my house. I've collected stuffed animals for years, and part of it was because I was getting freebies if you gave a donation to World Wildlife Fund or quote-unquote adopted an animal. They would send a stuffed toy replica of that animal. And so I just thought, oh, that's cool. And so I slowly created a menagerie of stuffed toys that have overtaken my living room. And the largest one was this bear that I thought was going to be big, but is big.
It's huge.
5 foot tall or something. It's just huge. So anyway, she came in and instantly went to the bear and wanted her picture taken with it. So anyway, it's cute. It was just fine. The whole evening was fine. So
that's great. How does it feel now? Because I think we had that conversation probably like 6 months ago, the conversation about feeling a little bit braver, like, you know, me staying with you in the stores.
Yeah,
and
yeah. I'm still a bit leery, not of being so much in the store, but the transportation to get to the store, because we only have one taxi company in Santa Fe, and I haven't gone out to try Uber yet, so I don't know how those people are. But And there's the public bus system. And just from what I've observed about some of the people that drive the taxis and what they listen to on the radio and, you know, blah, 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 you sort of not, you get a feeling that they might not be as accepting. And so I'm a little hesitant to sort of take a taxi and wear a skirt, let's say. Mm-hmm. So in those conditions, I'll have to wear shorts in the summer or a pair of pants. Not change much else, but that's enough to make me feel safe, I guess. It's sort of like this armor against the people who are femphobic in society.
Mm-hmm. Does it feel now like wearing men's clothes? Does that feel more like drag? Like, does that
feel
weird?
It's a bit of it is a bit of that. I guess you'd call it drag, but it's more of a, I don't know, just a way to feel safe in society. It's where you, in places where you aren't sure, you know, once I'm sure about a place, like I would have no problem being in Target or Trader Joe's, both places. You know, I've walked the aisles of both places. No one's been upset or said anything or whatever, maybe a smile or two. So, but that's about it.
Yeah, I've noticed, I guess after we had the conversation 6 months ago, I was started to be more aware of environment and how people were perceiving you and looks on faces. And so I started like scanning more. And I think part of like a protective part of me kind of kicked into like, you know, like, and with some started to think like, God, if somebody said something to us, like how would I react and what would I say? I mean, it hasn't come up, but
any exchange of expression in there?
I have. Some people smile and some people take double takes and some people, you know, scowl. And I feel very defensive of you when that happens.
At least they know enough not to make a scene about it.
They don't. Yeah. Nobody has been like outwardly rude or said something behind our back, at least when we've been together.
Well, you know, and I think that Santa Fe is a much more accepting place than a lot of places.
It's
called,
true.
It's called the city different, for crying out loud. So,
right.
And I should say that in addition to you and the trans support group in Santa Fe, my ex-partner, who I was with for 7 years, from the very late 80s through the mid 90s, has been very, very supportive. And, you know, I think our friendship has grown since I came out to him.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe it put some things that were a little bit issues in our relationship into perspective. So that's another person who I think I just wanted to say here is it was important in my life and been very supportive.
Right. You two seem to have a really great relationship. You know, didn't he visit this last year?
Yeah, he used to live here in Santa Fe for many years before he moved down to Tucson and got married. So he'll come back up here to visit people in addition to me. So it's usually not just me, but I'm part of the list, I guess, when he comes to Santa Fe now. So that's cool.
Yeah. Well, there's one question on here that I was curious about on this interview list is, is there something about me that you've always wanted to know but have never asked in relation to this topic or of gender identity and our friendship?
Okay. Are you asking me?
Yeah, I'm asking you. Is there any questions you have for me, basically?
I think I know the answer, but I just ask. Is how have you felt as this sort of has evolved over time?
I felt curious to just learn, and I felt very accepting. You know, I love you as a friend very much. And I think I've said this to you before, like, I just feel like it's so personal identity, you know, all identities are so personal. And, I just wish our world was more accepting of each other and respectful of each other in general with identities. So, you know, that's my path. I try to have a lot of compassion and kindness towards all kinds of people, even people I am diametrically opposed to with beliefs. But, you know, in our case, I'm not opposed. So it's just very easy to love you as you are. And I appreciate that you're very accepting, like when I don't know something or if I, you know, say the wrong thing or... there's grace, like we can
the pronoun slip ups.
The pronoun slip ups. Yeah, I'm still working on on that. But
the future is going to be interesting because we've come on the radar now. Non-binary people have gotten on the radar, particularly of the right. There have been some stories, and every time we're in there, the latest one now, we're called pronoun warriors, evidently, and we're in the battle for pronouns. It started in the University of Toronto. I told you about this.
Oh, right.
This teacher who said he's not going to use non or gender neutral pronouns. He just is not going to use them, and it started this big brouhaha. Anyway. So that's been interesting. So I'm kind of curious as to how this is going to evolve. I mean, usually movements first are something that are just within the communities that identify that way,
mm-hmm.
and then they reach out to people around them and make connections. But then when it becomes known in the wider community, if it's at odds with the norms of the wider community or some people in the wider community, pushback is always going to happen. I saw it happen a lot, you know, with the lesbian, gay, bisexual movement,
mm-hmm.
and I've certainly seen it with the transgender movement, the whole issue of bathrooms and so forth. Thank God Santa Fe has an ordinance that all single-stall bathrooms should be gender neutral, but that's just one town or one city.
Right.
And so there are those battles for the future.
It's a really interesting time. I mean, I've told you this before. Like, I've heard transphobia comments come from, you know, other gay and lesbian folks that I know. And not as much anymore. But, you know, 10 years ago, whenever there was starting to be more awareness, I was surprised that some of my friends who I felt were educated and progressive and compassionate in general would say things that were so transphobic and trying to stand up and be a trans ally, even in, you know, private conversations. So I just have never understood why we wouldn't, you know, be brothers and sisters together and band together. And I feel like we're all in it together, fighting for equality.
I think there's just some people of privilege who feel that they've gotten what they want. Maybe they have protection in their state and they've got the right to marry. And so this whole transgender thing is a distraction for them. And I don't know how big the population or subpopulation of those people are, but I certainly see it in comments. Lord knows.
Right. You spend a lot of time online. Well, since I've known you, I mean, we met, 16 years ago, maybe?
Something like that.
Yeah. You've always been such a proud activist and have done a lot for the community. And I know that right now you're doing a lot for trans rights and allies with your blog and different things online.
Right.
But I've always appreciated that about you and your activism.
Thank you.
I feel like you really work, you know, to not just live, but to try to promote rights and human rights and bring awareness to topics.
Well, I think that's sort of where we are. It's our role in the world. You know, if there's something you believe in and it's something that society has some trouble with, then the only logical thing is to try to educate those in society with reason, with logic. And if they respond other than with reason and logic, maybe sometimes you just need to say, okay, you know, when you're willing to think this through rationally, I'll talk to you again. I think for people who have open minds, there's a famous bumper sticker, minds are like parachutes, they only function when open.
Right.
And sort of that's the way I feel about people. You know, it's, if they're willing to be open, then everything's going to be fine. But unfortunately, you know, I think this election season and so forth has stirred up a hornet's nest of people who are in the far right that have sort of feel empowered by the current Republican candidate. So How that ends up sorting itself off after the election is going to be an interesting thing to see.
Right. There's a lot of fear being stirred up. But I know we're almost at our time. So thank you for being my friend, Jerry, and for just being open about who you are. I feel like I've learned a lot just from being your friend. So thank you.
Thank you. I would say the same thing. Thank you for being there for me when things were a little tougher and I was trying to get the courage to be myself. So thanks.
You're welcome. Love you.
You're welcome.